Chapter 4. Loss or Draw? Freddy City. Despite Akuyin's determination to keep focused on the endless paperwork, his mind roamed to the east, and he imagined events playing out in Moreland Province. He had seen Brigadier Zulfa and 6,500 Narthani troops and 2,500 Kadeli allies start for the Moreland border. Part of him had wanted to lead the invasion, but his responsibility was to all of the Narthani military forces, army and navy, and the 100,000 Narthani non-military colonists on the island. He sighed. The waiting stack never seemed to grow smaller, no matter how many hours he spent attacking it. The current paper spread before him included cargo manifests of the latest supply ship from Narthon, uniforms, Narthani civilian clothing, replacement muskets for those becoming unserviceable, 6 fortification cannons of the 30 he had requested, bags of correspondence for the troops and civilians, 20 more priests of Narth who had usurped berths of new junior officers, on, plus 10 vats of Narthani ale. The latter unrequisitioned and all spoiled. He suspected graft through someone in their quartermaster corps. He acknowledged the receipt of all of the cargo, those of use and those not. As soon as he finished with the incoming cargo, he moved on to the items of the return trip to Narthon, including a few well-connected traders, 5 Narthani broken from their rank, and from families too important for Akuyin to consider executing, and hulls filled with grains and cured meats. He also suspected the paper stack contained the yearly performance reviews of all officers under his command. Although he made only the primary evaluations of those immediately under him, he routinely reviewed all of the evaluations and concurred with, or put aside, any evaluations where he needed to talk with the evaluator. Beyond that, he didn't care to speculate on the rest of the pile as he doggedly continued. As usual, he made it a routine to quit by sundown to be home for evening meal with his wife Rabia and children. As much as he disliked such paperwork, he normally disciplined himself to work efficiently. But not on days like today. The latest news from Zulfa outside Moreland City reported that the first day of direct contact with the Kadeli army, if clansmen mobs could be called an army, proved inconclusive. The islanders had massed in front of the Narthani positions, milled around for hours and feinted attacks twice, but never came within firing range. Zulfa reported he would give them the next day to attack, and if they didn't, he would continue to advance on the city to force a battle.
If a general engagement has happened, it might have been days ago, thought Akuyin, so Zulfa would have sent notice back to the closest Iwil semaphore station, in which case I should get news any time now.
He had barely finished the thought when a knock on his office door preceded an aide, unbidden, rushing in with a piece of paper. Akuyin's intended reprimand of the young officer for his decorum faded as he saw the shocked look on the aide's face.
A semaphore message from Brigadier Zulfa, sir,
choked out the young officer. Akuyin's displeasure vanished to be replaced by a knot in his stomach. What? He took the paper and read the few lines. From Brigadier Zulfa to General Akuyin. Engaged Kadeli large force, right wing collapsed, lost half cannon, 3 squares destroyed, withdrawing to Iwil more later.
Great Narth, he exclaimed, shaken. Forced to withdraw. What could have happened?
Remembering the young officer standing in front of his desk, Akuyin composed himself.
Thank you. I take it you read the message.
Yes, sir. The standing orders from Major Solchak are to read all incoming messages and prioritize getting them to you. I know anything from Brigadier Zulfa would be considered high priority. Should I not have read it, sir?
No, no. Nothing to worry about on that account. Of course, the news is not what we expected, is it?
Bakuyin managed a tone he hoped conveyed his reception of disappointing news, but not disaster.
No, sir. Not expected at all. Pardon me if I'm out of line, but what does this mean for our mission?
Mean? It only means things didn't go as well as we hoped. And we'll just have to work harder, doesn't it?
Yes, sir,
said the relieved young officer. Only a minor setback, I'm sure, sir. Only after the door closed and Akuyan sat alone again did he let his calm facade fade.
Beaten by the islanders.
How can this be?
Well, not beaten, I suppose. Zoltar says they are withdrawing. Ivax is not one to play with words, so if they were beaten badly, he would have said they were retreating. It must mean the battle was indecisive. But the army is still intact, and Zoltar has decided to break off contact.
Another message delivered that evening to his villa, and further messages the following several days, bore out Akuyan's prediction. By then, Akuyan knew the basic elements of events. The Iwilis had abandoned their position, protecting the right flank, and had fallen into an islander trap, resulting in over 1,000 Iwilis dead, including the Iwil headman and his two sons. Before the Nothani commanders on the scene realized the right wing's exposure, the islanders attacked by enfilade and rolled over the first infantry block and the right artillery position and mauled two or three more infantry blocks before other units could reposition. The islanders didn't pursue further attacks, except for harassing the army as it withdrew into Iwil. There, Zulfa found the Parthmal base destroyed, and he ordered the army to continue to Hounslow, the Iwil capital. Zulfar waited until the army reached Hounslow and for confirmation that no major islander forces had crossed the border before he rode hard back to report in person to Akuyan in Predi City. He came straight to Akuyan's office without changing clothes or doing more than shake off the worst of the dust. Four men stood hunched over a diagram of the Nothani deployment in front of Moreland City: Zulfa, Akuyan, Assessor Hizair, and Admiral Kalkin.
And Hetman Iwil gave no indication of what he was doing or any other warning? Asked Akuyan angrily.
Nothing, answered Zulfa bitterly. The combination of lingering morning mist, gunpowder smoke, and grass fire set by the Cadeli made it difficult to see the entire field. Somehow, the Cadeli enticed Hetman Iwil to chase after several hundred clansmen who seemed to be fleeing to the south. Unconfirmed reports say the clansmen might have included the Keelan Hetman, which would fit, since the two Hetmen were longtime enemies. Whatever precipitated his leaving his position, Hetman Iwil took 2/3 of his riders with him and ran straight into an ambush, where the clans decimated them. The Cadeli then attacked the flank of our rightmost block and rolled right over them and into the artillery position. Neither the block nor the artillery batteries realized their danger in time to react. The islanders then pushed farther and savaged two more infantry blocks before other blocks wheeled in formation to face the flank. Plus, I had much of my own cavalry moved to back up the infantry. At that point, the Cadeli pulled back. Faced with losing half the artillery and with three of the infantry blocks destroyed or badly mauled, and of course, most of the Iwilis, I decided it best to withdraw to reassess.
And your reasoning for not counterattacking at that point, or at least trying to retake the artillery? Asked Akuyan.
Colonel Erdelin reported that his men saw the Cadeli hauling our cannon away. In the confusion and limited visibility, it was impossible to be sure where the cannon were. If they had left them in place and tried to use them against us, I would have considered such a counterattack. However,
Under the circumstances, I didn't think a counterattack advisable. The Cadelli were on two sides with large mobile forces. We didn't have enough cavalry, and the infantry was unlikely to force them to stand.
Zalfa wiped sweat and dirt from his face with a cloth.
In addition, what we faced was completely different from the intelligence we used in planning. We expected a mass of uncoordinated light cavalry, and we based our plans on trying to force them into attacking under conditions where we could crush them. While we inflicted significant losses on a cavalry charge into our prepared fire zone, we didn't catch as many of their riders as we had hoped. And the attack on our right flank was far more coordinated and well carried out than we had any reason to suspect them capable of. Yes, enticing the Iwalese to break position was the key. But reports are that both at the ambush of the Iwalese and the flank attack, the Cadelli had light cannon.
"Cannon?" said a startled Hizer. "We had no reports of any field cannon among the clans."
"Well, reports are not, they had them. Not many. And witnesses say they were odd pieces with three barrels about the size of swivel guns. It's doubtful they had much range, but at close quarters they delivered canister effectively. Once the islanders got through the Iwalese screen, they got their artillery within 100 yards of the rightmost infantry block and began firing before they were seen. In the confusion and limited visibility, I suspect the leaders of that block had no idea what was happening. The final factor in my decision to withdraw was that they didn't act like an enemy inexperienced in modern warfare. Fixing our attention to the front by sacrificing as many as 1,000 men, then attacking an exposed flank and pressing hard until they came against more prepared positions, upon which time they withdrew, all speaks to me of significant military experience and planning.
But we found no indication of any such capability with the Cadelli, said Akuyin, who turned to his heir. Did I miss anything in reports?
No, said the assessor. Everything we learn says the islanders have never fought engagements of this size, never with cannon, and they certainly have never faced a modern mixed army of infantry, artillery, and cavalry. All of which leads to an obvious conclusion.
They had help from outside of Cadellium, stated a grim Zalfa.
Hizer nodded, as did Kalkan, who added,
That occurs to me as well. But who?
It could be any one of our enemies, said Akuyin. The Iroquinix and the Fuomi are the obvious possibilities, since they're the ones we're currently in direct conflict with. But any of the other realms could be worried about the expansion of the Empire, and are one day turning attention to them. Certainly, any of the nations on Llandalin are possibilities.
Zalfa wiped his face again and took a long draught of water. He appeared drained. Akuyin looked grimly at his subordinate.
Arvax, I expect a full written report tomorrow. But for now, go and clean up. And get some food and sleep. I doubt you've had much of either the last few days. We'll meet again after I read your detailed report.
After Zalfa had left the room, Hizer turned to Akuyin.
What do you think? Did he do the right thing by withdrawing instead of counterattacking?
It's impossible to be sure.
My own inclination would have been to counterattack and still try to accomplish the mission, but Zalfa was the commander on the scene. He's the only one who saw everything in real time and had to make the judgment. Without other indications, I'm inclined to support his decision. In addition, I've had high confidence in his abilities for several years, and that experience weighs in his favor.
I've also known Ivax for several years and have always thought him one of the better troop commanders I've worked with, said Kalkin, who then added, But again, what does this do to the mission objectives and timetables?
Obviously, the best-case outcome isn't going to happen. We're not going to take all of Cadellium easily. Certainly not with what we have here now, Akuyan said with a scowl. Izair frowned.
So you don't think you could mount a more deliberate campaign, such as the Circum-Island strategy, moving on the coastal clans using the navy for support and mobility?
Akuyan looked at the Cadellium map on the wall and waved toward the western coast.
For example, if we moved against Stent province, they could withdraw inland while the clans gathered forces. If they refused to give battle, we don't have enough men to hold the province and move on to the next one, such as Pewit. The Stentese would just move back in and they would be in our rear and so on around the island. Yes, we can take any one clan's province, but we can't hold it and take more. We've just not got enough men. Plus, the more we stretch out our men, the easier it would be for the islanders to whittle us away a little at a time.
Akuyan kept facing the war map as he ruminated. Also, remember that they put upward of 12,000 men against us this time. Now that they've pushed us back, I'd be surprised if the clans that didn't oppose us this time won't be emboldened, and we could face 20,000 to 30,000 the next time.
When you add their greater mobility and cannon they already have and those they captured, I think the best we can do is hold what we have.
You haven't mentioned it, General, said Izair. But I know what else is on your mind. You have to protect the Nathani non-combatants on the island. There are 60,000 Nathani plus another 40,000 servants and slaves in Predi province. For all practical purposes, they are part of the Nathan Empire. If you used enough forces to try a further campaign against the islanders, wouldn't this put Predi in danger?
You're correct, Sadik, it's on my mind. If we sent troops with naval support to attack other clans, it would weaken our ability to defend Predi province. We would be forced to pull all non-military personnel back into cities and towns, which would prevent growing the food and mining the ore that make this expansion possible.
Given all these considerations,
I'm suspending the status of this mission and restricting it to holding the existing three provinces and continuing whatever non-direct military activity is still possible.
Full reports will be sent to Nathan immediately. Unless I hear compelling arguments against, I will recommend that a substantially larger force is needed to subdue the island.
Akuyan paused and looked for comments.
Assessor, he's there.
I am inclined to agree, but I would like to read the reports in more detail before I write my observations to the High Command.
Will one day be sufficient?
I think I can finish tomorrow if I get Zalfa's written reports early enough.
Good. Admiral Kalkin, prepare your fastest sloop for return to Nathan with dispatches. Take no cargo or passengers. Instruct the captain on the urgency to make the fastest time possible.
There will be complaints about no cargo or passengers from at least the trading houses and Prelate Balkan, cautioned Kalkin.
That's why there ought to be no exceptions.
A blanket prohibition is easier to enforce than a leaky one.
The next day involved a flurry of report writing, including Assessor Izair's concurrence with Akuyan's recommendation. On the second morning tide,
an Athani sloop left the harbor and hoisted full sails within 300 yards of shore. Catching the winds northeast around the northern tip of the Landalan continent to Izarkin, the closest Nathani port, would take the sloop a month and a half. From there, the reports would travel 3 to 4 6 days by riders and semaphore to reach the High Command at Umasia, the Empire's capital.
5 months, thought Okuyan. It will be a minimum of 5 months to hear any response to our reports. And given how slowly the decision wheels turn at such high levels, and then factoring in time to gather reinforcements, I expect it will be 6 months or more. I'm afraid we have some tense months ahead.